From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Usually that's Noel, but he's not here today.
And we promise that as far as we know, our compatriot is not possessed. We are, of course, joined with our super producer, Paul Deccant. They call me Ben. You are you. And that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. The power of podcast compels us.
Yes, right? It does.
To perform certain rituals at certain times. And this is one of our rituals that you and I have been doing for a number of years, Matt. We research something strange. We may conduct an interview. We may travel somewhere, and then we come together in this place and
with our Coca-Cola holy water and pour it into our mouths. At least I do. I think you've got straight up coffee today, which is just as good, if not better.
And our relics are with us, our microphones, our headphones.
Yeah, our smelly pop filters.
Mm-hmm. That was a subject of discussion before we dropped in.
Everybody uses them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you have coffee breath. It's all good. Sometimes you have Coca-Cola breath.
My strategy, by the way, is I'm pretty specific with this. I try to stay away from the mic. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to get right on it.
Yeah, fist length.
Voiceover, yeah. And additionally, one could argue, if we were to look at podcasting as a ritual or a rite, that what you and I are doing now is incantation.
Ooh.
Because we do spend, you and I especially have spent a lot of time behind the scenes or off air, off camera, saying, you know, how should we approach an idea? Should mm-hmm. we structure it? Is there a power in formula, in ritual, in rite? And we think there is.
Yeah. At least to an extent, or in a way, mm-hmm. because you expect it. You, as a person receiving a ritual in this sort or an incantation like this, I don't know. It's almost as if it triggers a thing that is already implanted in your brain, the pathways that are already there because you kind of know what it is. Mm-hmm. But then it's going to open up new pathways that are connected to that one.
Right. That's a question that you might want to ask yourself, longtime listeners, friends and neighbors. Have we primed you? Have we programmed you to anticipate certain stimuli and respond in certain ways?
Yes.
Yeah, the answer is yes. First-time listeners, welcome to the show.
Hey.
hope you enjoy it.
Before we jump into today's topic, we want to start with a quick quote that kind of sets up maybe the framing of mind for some of the people who think in the same way of these characters. Quote, "Today, the world does not turn from God because it is idolatrous. Rather, it pursues pure atheism so as to put science on the altar." And that's from Father Gabriel Amorth, and he is someone we will get to a little later.
Matt, what do you think of when you hear the word exorcism?
I see images from film and television, mostly film, movies. The Exorcist in particular, I have very vivid images of a body rising off of a bed, of mm-hmm. vomit coming from a mouth, of a discolored face. That is possession in particular. And then when I think of exorcism, I think of holy water, and I think of reading from a Bible, mm-hmm. reading the Word of God, other symbology, crosses, artifacts of that sort.
Sure, Bibles.
Yeah.
Vestments.
Yes, the touching of hands. Mm-hmm. That's what I see, a very Hollywood version of exorcism.
Agreed. You know, and I believe that that's something common, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people at least in the West, when we hear the term exorcism, we think of, as you said, Hollywood, a good horror film.
Well, yeah, because most of us haven't experienced a true exorcism or what would be considered a real exorcism.
Mm-hmm. Right. At least in that specific Catholic framework, right? In the past, on this very show, almost 4 years ago to the day,
wow,
we covered the phenomenon of exorcism in general, along with how it differs across time and cultures. We'll give a brief background of exorcism and possession here, and for more in-depth information, please check out our earlier episode, Exorcisms, an Introduction. Not the most creative title.
You know, that's exactly what it was, though.
It was.
We did a pretty good job. I really liked that episode.
I went back and listened to it, and I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I expected it to be terrible, but 2014 was such a long time ago now.
We were just learning what the show was.
Mm-hmm, right? We were like priests conducting our first – okay. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to let that analogy go. So here are the facts. The brief background, broad stroke stuff Matt and I will give you here is the following. The practice of exorcism predates the existence of all Abrahamic religion, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, all of it. This stuff was old beans by the time Jesus Christ or Moses or any of the other religious figures, mm-hmm. right? Of course, Muhammad and so on, before anybody else came into the fold or the zeitgeist of spiritual belief.
The concept of some kind of spirit entering a corporeal body somehow and then taking it out.
Yeah. Non-consensually entering and being non-consensually pulled.
Yep.
By the time the story of Jesus Christ casting spirits into pigs came about, or by the time, you know, people heard that story, mm-hmm. whether they heard it in an oral tradition, whether they, who knows, witnessed it themselves, mm-hmm. or whether they read about it mm-hmm. centuries or millennia later, the concept of exorcism would have already been more than familiar to the audience. In ancient Sumeria and Babylon, exorcists already played a prominent role somewhere between that of a priest and a doctor. And it's pretty fascinating because the rituals from what we know, of course, a lot of this is lost to time or publicly available knowledge has been lost to time. The rituals would vary, but they still relied on artifacts, techniques, and as you said, Matt, the main goal was to drive out a spirit. They might not have used the word demon, maybe more like spirit.
A spirit that, again, non-consensually was there, probably of a bad nature, a negative nature.
Right. And this could be, in some cases, this could be a human spirit, a ghost. Right? An angry ancestor. In other cases, though, in a way that's more familiar with us now in the modern day, it would be something that never was human.
Yeah.
A monster.
From another plane, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. And they would concoct these magical substances or potions, these relics and artifacts composed of animals or plants or, you know, different stones that were thought to have various powers in the world of sympathetic magic. We're talking about iron from meteors, reeds, flour, animal hair. Birds were really big mm-hmm. in this time. And birds still are symbolically hugely important, right?
Oh, yeah. They're thought to possess – or they have been for a long time thought to possess some kind of supernatural power, especially white owls. White owls. And you have to imagine that image would be startling in a way. Mm-hmm. And, I guess you can just imagine viewing one just perched outside a window or something, or perched outside of a home, just sitting there in a tree and gazing.
Now, we have both lived outside of urban areas in the past, mm-hmm. right? And I believe Paul has as well. I have to admit, even as someone without Noel's crippling fear, of all things avian, when I unexpectedly see a large predatory bird, I mean, that's a double take moment. I'm going to say I'm startled, not frightened, because usually the for a long time now, I've been a bit too large for the average bird to attack. But have you ever been in a situation where you hear a slight rustle and you turn to the left and there's a hawk or a falcon or something?
Yeah, I have two really fast stories. Okay, so the other day I was driving to work in the morning. It was very foggy outside. It was the day I posted on our Instagram couple of pictures of Atlanta in this heavy, misty fog.
Conspiracy Stuff Show. Feel free to follow us.
Yes. Well, as I got to the stop sign in my neighborhood, I looked to my right and I see, I'm not really sure what it is at first, and then I realize, oh, it is a large brown hawk. Very large, about the size of a cat, a large cat. And it has its wings wrapped around something. It's sitting or standing on the ground. And something is like kind of twitching and moving underneath its wings, and you can see it kind of readjusting itself. And then it opens its wings a little bit. It sends its beak down really fast around the neck of this squirrel that it's got trapped. And it's, and then it's holding it down still. And I swear it looks up and it looks right at my car, because I just stop and I just stare at it for a little while. It stares at me. And then I go, all right. I'm moving on and I'm driving carefully just in case this is an omen of some sort. And the other one is in my backyard there. It's a fenced in area. There is a family of large owls, and I didn't realize this.
Oh, wow.
Until one night I took my small dachshund terrier mix out in the back to go to the bathroom.
Buddy.
And I heard a sound that I was unfamiliar with. I did not know what type of bird it was. I didn't know anything. I just knew it was a large bird, and it was just above me in this large oak tree.
Was it a vocalization
that
you heard?
It was a vocalization that I cannot reproduce. And
oh, it sounded like a curse word, huh?
Yes, yeah. But it was so eerie, and I didn't know until when I got this powerful flashlight out of my house, shined it up, and it was just this huge owl perched on this tree, and it was, again, like just staring down at the source of light at me. And the feeling, even now, in then 2017, was of dread of some sort.
You know, and don't be fooled by the vocalization either, because owls are some of the quietest predatory birds. I can completely understand where you're coming from, and that's so cool that you live there, because you know your chances of having any sort of rodent problem have just bottomed out.
Yes. Very, very true. Anyway, that's enough on owls.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That is enough. And then, you know, things like ravens would be thought to be messengers.
Yes.
Owls also. But owls were more associated in these ancient times, in Sumeria at least, with insidious powers, the powers of darkness and death and decay and evil, right?
Yep.
Whereas ravens were like bad news. But owls,
just the messenger.
Owls were terrible news. Then, of course, you could probably see this coming, folks, the idea of water. Water symbolized the presence of Ea, the god of water. So it was often sprinkled on the victim of a possession during incantations to symbolize the cleansing of the victim, right? The influence of the god of water taking away the contamination of this evil spirit.
Symbol we see with modern day baptisms.
Right. Exactly. Hole in one. Spittle, by the way, was especially important. It was thought to be a potent toxin when used against demons.
And that's, spittle?
Yeah. Like saliva.
Wow.
So that's why several ancient texts refer to these sorcerer priests as kasapu, however it's pronounced, which was Arabic for to poison, and the Sumerian equivalent was meant saliva or spittle.
Wow.
The idea being the poisoning demons. And as you pointed out, many of the vestiges of these older practices can be seen in exorcism rituals and rites around the world today, incantations, the use of sanctified or holy water, the use of animals and relics. In this episode, for the strange phenomenon we'll examine today, we're going to focus on Catholic perspectives concerning exorcism. So what – if we are asking the Catholic Church, if we're hanging out with Pope Francis and we ask him, what's exorcism? What does he say?
He's going to say, the act of driving out or warding off demons or evil spirits from persons, places, or things which are believed to be possessed or infested by them, or are liable to become victims or instruments of their malice. And that's according to the Catholic Encyclopedia.
Right. That does sound like it would be a bit of a complex sentence structure to generate off the dome, doesn't it? While the treatment of this perceived condition, spiritual possession, may vary from one culture to the next, the idea is extraordinarily common, as we discussed in our previous episode, throughout history, and the gist of it is pretty much the same across time, culture, and space. An evil, typically non-corporeal entity or non-physical entity invades a physical vessel. In horror films or horror stories, this is often a person, often a kid who turns really creepy, or an elderly person, because those two ends of the mortality cycle of humanity are the things that psychologically tend to creep people out the most.
Yeah. Well, and in a way are the weakest parts of that bell curve.
That's a great point. That is a really great point. Also, however, places or objects may be considered infected. There's an excellent article on our parent website, How Stuff Works. It's called How Exorcisms Work. And they break down some of the approaches that the Catholic Church takes to exorcisms. This article, by the way, is solely based on Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And we can't stress it enough. Exorcism, possession, it is not a Catholic thing alone. It's just something – like if you hear about it here in the U.S., you are most likely going to hear about it through this lens. Anyhow, according to this, the Catholic Church recognizes not one but several types of exorcism, and some of them may surprise you.
Yeah, the first one is baptismal exorcism, and this is when you bring an infant, like a baby, prior to being officially baptized into the church. You bring it into the church to cleanse it of the evil resulting from its original sin, which is dark in a way, but it's also the least worrisome of the types of exorcism. The second one is simple exorcism, and this is more of a blessing, really, than pulling things out of it so much, I guess, in a way. But you're blessing a place or a thing, so a physical object, to rid it of some kind of evil infestation.
Right, right. And you see similar this sort of thing, while qualifying as exorcism, is something that you would see in other cultures. Perhaps the idea that you may have heard from some of your college roommates in the past of burning sage to purify a place because something bad happened there. Then, of course, there's real exorcism. The real deal, the one we all hear about, performing the capital R, rite of capital E, exorcism to rid a living human being of possession by a diabolical entity. And that brings us to another question. How do you know whether someone's being possessed? How can you tell the difference between someone who's just being a real a-hole versus someone who's become an unwilling vessel for infernal forces of the, you know, the left hand of darkness, right? According to the church, there are several telltale signs of demonic possession that anyone can sense in general. You don't have to be a member of the clergy to notice these things. Speaking or understanding languages which the person has never learned. It's different from speaking in tongues, glossolalia, because that is believed to be indicative of religious ecstasy.
Yeah.
Whereas speaking in fluent Aramaic or something is considered to be a sign that there's a different entity at the wheel of your mind.
Yeah, the traditional speaking in tongues is – it's just gibberish. It's not actual formations of words or sentences generally. Then there's knowing or somehow revealing things that the person has no way of knowing. It just, if it was regular times and this person just was existing in their life, there's no way they could have known this.
Clairvoyance.
Yes.
Yeah, in physical strength beyond the person's natural physical makeup, which is an interesting thing because we know in times of great stress, that can actually happen. Hysterical strength is a thing to some degree. And then a violent aversion to God, the Virgin Mary, the cross, and other images of the Catholic faith.
Yeah, which, again, we have seen over and over.
So where does that leave us today? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. So today, exorcism remains the subject of this intense interest across the world, for peoples across the world, both for believers that think exorcism is real and you're actually bringing evil spirits out of a person, and skeptics who think it's just a strange ritual that's just stuck around.
An historical artifact or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point, Matt, because one thing that you notice is that even the people who, you know, the people, I refer to them as pseudo-skeptics, who are so into their idea of being a skeptic that they have severely crippled their ability to apply critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Even those people have a huge interest in the concept, right? It's entertaining in horror and in fiction, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also fascinating just from an anthropological perspective, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, with the quote we had at the top of the show, it seems in this world of science that in which we exist right now that exorcisms should have just been left by the wayside, and they most certainly haven't.
Exactly. Yeah, modern science often proposes that historical cases of exorcism can be attributed to a number of different mundane causes, including things like mental health issues that would not have been recognized in the same framework through which we recognize them today. Stuff like schizophrenia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Possibly dementia, for instance. Or even arguably in the case of the elderly, Alzheimer's.
Right?
Anything that seems to dramatically change someone's behavior, their emotional state, or distress them. Other undiagnosed, unrecognized diseases, genetic conditions. And then the more complex phenomenon of social pressures or behavior running in contravention to social mores, norms, or values of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Are you know, one thing that would happen in patriarchal societies, right? Are you a woman who doesn't want to be in this arranged marriage?
Yeah.
You must be possessed by the devil. How else would you have a problem with this? It's not you, it's this demon that said you shouldn't marry this 50-year-old man in your 12.
It must be.
It must be. Call the priest. So how far do we take this idea today, though? Are there literally modern exorcisms in the Catholic Church? Spoiler alert, yes, of course. But if so, how seriously does the Church take them? Here's where it gets crazy.
Again, like we said, while exorcism might seem like this artifact of some, you know, the bloody religious history that humanity has experienced, it's still taken very seriously by the Catholic Church. More seriously, in fact, in recent decades than it had been prior to that. There is this thing that this episode is really all about called the International Association of Exorcists. And here, let's talk about it. This is a Roman Catholic organization, and it sounds ancient. It sounds like something that would have been created in the 1500s, the 1600s or something. But no, it wasn't founded until the year 1990. And there were six priests that got together, including Father Gabriel Amorth, with the quote at the top of the show, and Father Jeremy Davies.
Right. Father Gabriel Amorth is someone that we touched upon in a couple of previous episodes. He was born in 1925, exorcist for the Diocese of Rome. He claimed to have performed, I believe, over 160,000 exorcisms.
Whoa.
Yeah, during his – now, he was a priest for decades and decades. He was often called by reputable news sources the Vatican's chief exorcist, which is more – I think we of me has said that as well. It turns out that's more the translation, because he is exorcist for the Diocese of Rome, but he's not he wasn't – there's not some sort of joint chiefs of staff for exorcism in Rome, and
yeah.
he's not the guy with the most stars or the biggest epaulettes or whatever. He was a priest for years and years before he became an official exorcist, and that's something we see with a lot of Catholic priests.
Yeah.
It's not something that people enter into on their first day of seminary. He was a priest in 1954, and he did not become an exorcist until 1986 under the tutelage of Candido Amantini. He loved the film The Exorcist.
Yeah.
I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
He loved it because he thought it was substantially correct, thus based on true events. And he thought the special effects were exaggerated, but he picture him shrugging and going, "Ah, it's a, you know, it's a movie."
Yeah. Yeah.
So he, in defense of this film, he said that, he was in an interview with the London Sunday Telegraph, and he stressed that people need to know what we do. We, in this sense, being exorcists, the different claims of the number of exorcisms that Amorth conducted, the reason for that difference is that there's no central database for the amount of exorcisms either performed per year, performed in total. But we can make some guesses on some of this stuff later. But that's why you hear his numbers differing. In October of 2000, it was reported he had performed over 50,000 exorcisms. In 2010, he said the number was 70,000. But by May of 2013, he said he had performed 160,000 over the course of his career. An important note here, as we said, there are different types of exorcism.
Yeah.
So that could count everything from praying for a bad place to be cleansed of some sort of influence to the stuff you would see in the film, The Exorcist.
Yeah. So this guy who has, you know, had already by the year 1990 had a lot of experience with exorcism, he and his buddies, his compatriots, along with Jeremy Davies, they form this organization, and there are only six people at this time. But then by the year 2000, there are over 200 members of this association. And the purpose of it in totality was to increase the number of official exorcists across the world, which is, you know, I guess something you would want to do if this is a problem that you see. And Father Amorth hoped that the existence of this organization would shed light on what he saw as this growing and often ignored problem, which was demonic possession, real demonic possession, and also a lack of priests with the knowledge and authority to perform the rites of exorcism.
Important point here with that phenomenal growth from 1990 to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So from over the course of 10 years, it went from 6 to 200 members. It still was not formally acknowledged or approved of by the actual Roman Catholic Church until 2014. But a lot of stuff was happening in the interim. Because of those 200 members in 2000, several went to a national meeting of exorcists organized in 2004
mm-hmm.
by the Archbishop of Mexico City, Cardinal Norberto Rivera Carrera. The purpose of this meeting was to fight back against what they saw as the spread of Satanism, to discuss ways in which to use the Word of God to denounce everything that is against God, which isn't just – it's everything – it's similar to the approach that the NSA or other post 9/11 intelligence agencies take toward rooting out terrorism.
Anything against national security.
National security, probably a better way to put it. So it's anything loosely associated. It's it's sort of the mentality where everybody's playing 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but now it's 6 degrees of terrorism, 6 degrees of Satan. So it's not whether something is openly associated with what they see as the powers of darkness with their by its practitioners, right? Like most people using a Ouija board are probably just playing a game from Parker Brothers, right?
Maybe.
But in this mind, they're saying, well, whether – regardless of whether the practitioners or the audience feels this is an infernal thing, we are going to combat it. We are going to root out every piece of possible influence that might be coming through these outlets. So what kind of stuff is this?
Everything from witchcraft to magic to occultism, fortune telling, the new age movements of using crystals for healing, even masonry.
Oh, and important note, that's Freemasonry, not just bricklaying.
Are you sure? Because I don't know.
Churches are built of stone.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. All right. The meeting itself was attended by over 500 people. Most of these people are priests. They were from all across Mexico. All of them were somehow involved with exorcism, whether, you know, they were new to the game or seasoned veterans. Besides Cardinal Carrera, other notable guests included, as we kind of mentioned before, Father Mario Angel or Angel Flores Ramos. He was the director of theology at the Department of the Pontifical University of Mexico. Father Giancarlo Gremolazo, the president of the International Association of Exorcists at the time. So he is the president of the association that we discussed earlier. You also had Father Gabriel Amorth, the founder of that association, or one of the founders of that association.
He's the driving force, sort of a president emeritus.
Yeah, sure.
So there's a big question that comes up here. And all right. Before we get to it, just to paint some of Father Amorth's character.
Okay.
This is an unrelated story we found in our research that I think is worthwhile.
Okay.
So Father Gabriel Amorth was not just an exorcist, right? Listen to me, just an exorcist. Mm-hmm. Those guys, they will, you know what? They will really mess up your weekend, just on a side note.
Yeah.
So the – was not merely an exorcist or did not – relegate his integrity or sense of purpose solely to these ideas. He also fought against what he saw as corruption within the Vatican itself. He famously in 2012 attempted to blow the whistle on one of the Vatican's most enduring mysteries, which was the disappearance of a child named Emanuela Orlandi. Hmm. In 1983, she disappeared. She was 15 years old, child of a Vatican employee, and it became a mystery that was never going to be solved. And people had made various claims about it. In 2005, an anonymous caller to an Italian crime show on TV said that you could find evidence of what happened to her in the tomb of a mobster who was gunned down by rival gangsters in the 90s. But in 2012, Father Amorth said that the girl was abducted by people within the Vatican and part of the establishment who had a sexual motive to the crime, that she was forced to take part in child abuse parties.
Whoa.
And he has the quote here, "The network involved diplomatic personnel from a foreign embassy to the Holy See. I believe Emanuela," Holy See being the Vatican, "I believe Emanuela ended up a victim of this circle." He told this to an Italian newspaper called La Stampa, and he dismissed the various plots going around that it was something, some sort of wet work, black bag stuff between intelligence agencies, or that it was attached to the mafia. Hmm. So this was a guy who took a stand for things that he felt strongly about and was not afraid to make enemies.
Yeah.
Which seems to me that he may have been a divisive figure in a place like the Vatican, which definitely practices its own sort of omerta or code of silence when it comes to these crimes.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I wanted to add that. I know it's a bit of a derailment, but it is important because I do think it paints his character as a man unafraid to speak truth to power, which is an all too rare trait in the modern world, and probably historically has been a very rare trait.
Yeah.
But that aside, those are bona fides to me in regard to his character, even though obviously I don't agree with the person. I've never met the person, so I don't agree with everything they stand for, what they say. But I am impressed when someone does their best to speak truth to power, and then leads us to ask a question. Why did this man organize this international association? Why did he travel to Mexico City? Why did he begin to recruit a cadre that later became an army of exorcists? What's the big deal?
And we'll explore it right after a quick word from our sponsors.
We've returned, and thankfully, we have an answer to this question. We don't always have an answer to questions.
No.
But in this case, we do. The formation of these organizations marked a strange trend in the world of possession reports and exorcism requests. Mm-hmm. As we said, there's still no publicly available central database tracking the number of exorcisms performed, but we're able to make some guesses about general trends based on reports from these associated organizations, influential priests like Amorth himself or Gremolazzo, and the reports of exorcists serving in specific archdioceses.
For several decades in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, reports of possession and, you know, requests for exorcisms had been on the decline. They've been reducing in number because for years after the Roman Catholic Church's Second Vatican Council, or what they called Vatican II,
that was electric boogaloo. Yeah. God, everybody at our job uses that joke.
Yeah. Well, it resulted in new church practices, like the official church practices that were deemed compatible with the contemporary world. And in this case, with this Vatican II, it was taboo for priests to speak of Satan as if a physical or a Satan actually existed.
Right. So not Satan as a real thing, Satan as a metaphor for the struggle to grow closer to God. That was 1962?
Yeah, roughly around there, 62, 65. Mm. However, in the more recent decades, as we're getting closer to today, exorcism requests didn't just start to grow. They didn't just inch up a little bit on the scale. They spiked way up, especially here in the United States as well as in the United Kingdom. And cultural scholars will often argue that this rise is coming out of the, you know, possibly what you could see as the spike would be the premiere of The Exorcist, which became a huge blockbuster hit.
1973.
Mm-hmm. Along with subsequent satanic panic that occurred here in the United States and elsewhere in the late 1980s and 90s, where just interest in the scary parts of possession, interest in belief that maybe there's Satanism occurring in the town where you live, where groups of people are getting around to worship Satan and hold rituals. And to the true believers, however, this is a signal of something much larger at play.
And this rise was such that as of 2016, despite the formation of the International Association of Exorcists, the Catholic Church was having serious problems fielding all requests for exorcisms, as many of the older exorcists were aging out or dying, and many of the newer, less experienced priests were frightened of enacting the rite. And again, this is, you know, serious stuff in this world. These individuals will be priests for decades before they tackle their first, you know, real exorcism, mm-hmm. quote unquote, to use the description in How Exorcism Works. Yet again, a fantastic article by How Stuff Works. I did not write it, so I feel fine bragging about it. It was written by Julia Layton, who always does wonderful work for us. Two of the most prominent exorcists in the United States, a fellow named Father Gary Thomas and a fellow named Father Vincent Lampert, note that it's not the church demanding more exorcisms, which it can do, right? It was on church orders that Mother Teresa was actually exorcised before her death, but rather the people, the lay folk. In Father Lampert's experience, only one out of every 5,000 or so requests is someone afflicted by a full demonic possession. He does say, however, that he has conducted countless exorcisms related to demonic obsession, demonic vexation, and demonic infestation.
Yeah, you'll also hear demonic oppression. Amongst those terms, where it's slightly different, little different things going on, but it's not a human being that has a demon inside of them that needs to get out.
Okay, right. So it's some kind of external.
A lot of times external, yeah.
So maybe there might be a physical malady.
Or being influenced in some way.
Sure, right. And Father Lampert also says that half the calls he receives are from non-Catholics. And this is interesting. This is a point that we need to make in defense of the Catholic Church's process here. Not a defense of the church overall, of course. But there's a pretty rigorous system built for the analysis of a initial possession report. Because the Catholic Church and the exorcists in the church are trained to come at this from a very skeptical place.
Yeah.
The first thing they will do is consult with everyone else to find any other cause.
With people of science. We're talking about
neurologists.
Yeah. Psychologists come out and make sure there's nothing else going on. See an actual physician, make sure there's no other malady. I have to say that part of this whole process does make me, I don't know, think there might be a little more sand to it, because the church itself as an organization is saying, well, we're going to weed out the stuff that isn't actually possession.
Well, and also to be objective about it, the Catholic Church is such a massive organization that if there were not some sort of filtration system, it would just be inundated with these things. And it already is.
But think about the donations.
Are donations mandatory?
No, but I'm saying if you had mandatory donations for the performing the rites of exorcism, and you have that many requests coming in.
That is diabolical. That is,
it is.
A terrible, terrible thing. Oh boy. You know what? Father Gabriel Emworth would not approve. he has passed from this mortal plane.
Yeah.
The organization, or the association of exorcists, rather, still exist, and the current president would probably also disagree.
Yeah, we have some quotes from him. Father Francesco Bamonte, he says, quote, "When listening to a prayer to the Virgin, the demon shows all of his hatred and fear toward her. He is forced to confirm that Mary is the Mother of God and that she intercedes for humanity. Satan is not the god of evil against the god of good. Rather, he is a being who God created as good and who, with some angels, also created good by God, became evil because they refused God and his kingdom with their free and final choice. Satan and the spirits at his service, therefore, are not omnipotent beings. They cannot perform miracles. They are not omnipresent. They cannot know our thoughts or the future. And just to know that that is a man speaking in 2016, the current president of the International Association of Exorcists truly believes, at least himself, and in the fairly large organization that he represents and heads, believes that that is true, that that is a problem that humanity must continue to deal with.
And they very much believe, both Monte and Amorth when he was alive, very much believe that that Satan is a real thing, right? That Amorth also, in regard to the sexual scandals and corruption rocking the Vatican, he believed there was evidence of corruption by the Antichrist.
Hmm.
So the foretold and much feared force of Satan embodied on the planet, right?
Hmm.
He thought that was real, and there both of these individuals and many of the people serving in the International Association of Exorcists believe that this rise in possession, or rise in reports of it in an increasingly secular world, come about in reaction to and relation with the division between spirituality and science, right?
Yeah.
As we said in this quote, so are people more likely to be possessed? To say that would require us to say that possession itself is real or something like it,
mm-hmm.
right? Or are people just searching for some sort of spiritual explanation that they find lacking in an increasingly unspiritual world? At the time.
And uncertain times.
And uncertain times. No kidding, man.
Right?
At the time of this recording, exorcisms continue to be on the rise. For the more skeptical in the crowd, or those who wouldn't subscribe to the idea of Catholicism or the Catholic perspective on exorcism, this indicates hysteria or failure to recognize the difference between a good popcorn-worthy horror flick and the facts. For the true believers, however, the late Father Amorth among them, this is indicative of something else, something larger, something very dangerous, and all too frighteningly real. It is important to say that he is not alone, or was not alone, nor were his colleagues. Other organizations have formed to combat the rising tide of alleged possession and the rising request for exorcisms. There's the Pope Leo XII Institute based in Milwaukee, which was founded in 2012 to support the, quote, spiritual formation of priests, bring the light of Christ to dispel evil.
Wow. Yeah. And this thing, it started as this just a series of meetings, informal meetings, at the request of bishops in the United States. They wanted training, really. They needed more people who could perform exorcisms. So they wanted education and training. And it was just – it's also a response to Pope St. John Paul II's recommendation that every single diocese should have an appointed exorcist. And a spokesperson with the United States Bishops Conference said, although ideally every diocese should have its own exorcist, there are no statistics kept by the church to the actual the factual numbers of how many exorcists there actually are.
Mm-hmm. There are also classes and courses offered by the church on exorcism, and the Catholic Church has actively been training experienced priests in the nuts and bolts of exorcism, how to evaluate a case from day one, how to request permission, and ultimately, if need be, how to act, how to enact the rite here. And on a side note for this, we should also acknowledge that while we have focused on the Catholic Church's efforts to combat this rise in exorcism requests, they are not alone in the game. Other Christian denominations, evangelical as well, have also begun combating what they see as a rise in possessions and spiritual afflictions from demonic forces. This is a rising tide across multiple things. I guess what we're emphasizing here is this is not a matter of three elderly or six elderly priests high up in the Vatican social hierarchy who were able to push through something that they were interested in, like that high-level executive at Sony who was able to push through psychic experiments.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? And this doesn't seem to end after some of these folks have passed away. And we want to ask you, we want to end more on a question here. Is possession or something like it real? And do you think that the spiritual interpretations of it are accurate, or do you think they are a cultural framework on something else? Right?
Yeah.
And if so, what?
Yeah, and what's the closest you have come to experiencing a possession or exorcism? Like, have you been peered through a door and seen one? Have you been a part of one? We would love to hear your stories.
And then perhaps more importantly, I won't speak for you, Matt, but from my end, more importantly, why is it on the rise? Because that's the spookiest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you believe in this, whether or not you are Catholic, whether or not you are spiritual in any remote 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon sense of the term, it is inarguable that these reports and requests are rising.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of fantastic segues, it's time for our
Shout Out Corners. Kadoosh. Our first tweet comes from What Up Saucy. What Up Saucy says, wow, I'm still my pants from that Gloomy Sunday episode. Well done, gentlemen. Hashtag Thursday.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We all really put some blood, sweat, and tears and some late nights into that one. And we're so glad that someone enjoyed it.
Yeah. And, you know, people have been asking us for an unbleeped version, an uncensored version, but I don't think you're going to get one unless you search for it and you can find it online somewhere through the Fringe Festival, which you might be able to.
I would love to get some version of that out. We also have a, when we originally wrote it, we had no idea that we would eventually put it on this show.
No.
So we really leaned into some language there. But yeah, maybe we can get an uncensored version out. We'll look for it. But we also will have some more things like that on the way. So if you enjoyed that, stay tuned. And if you'd like to hear more of them, write to our bosses directly. Tag How Stuff Works wherever you find the social media platform. Say, we want more of this. And who knows?
It might happen. You might make it come true.
Yeah, you might manifest it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have another shout out from Kate Landis, who says, conspiracy stuff. I once went to the doctor for an abscess. They told me that antibiotics don't do anything for a normal abscess, but that doctors like to prescribe them to make the patient feel like something is being done. Then they prescribed me antibiotics. I didn't take them.
Hmm. Good on you, Kat. Kate? Kite?
C-A-Y-T.
Kate? I think it's Kate.
Oh, with a little Australian
Kate
accent?
Landis. Yeah, Kate Landis.
I was checking on some of one of our earlier episodes, and you did a great Australian accent.
I did the same thing, and you were amazing at your Australian accent.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I can only do it for maybe four very specific words, and unfortunately, none of them form a coherent sentence. But to Kate's point, that's That's a very valid concern. We know that the overprescription of antibiotics has been a literal case of something they don't want you to know.
Yeah, making all the stuff that those antibiotics are supposed to fight even stronger if you don't take the full dose in the right amount of time.
Right.
And it's really bad. So then everybody else taking antibiotics, it decreases their ability to fight the thing because the thing is now stronger.
Maybe we should look into some of that, the current state of antibiotics. We did Rise of the Superbug, but I don't know if we've looked at it too recently. And unfortunately, the situation is changing.
Only getting worse.
Man, I pulled up Pandemic 2 again, online game, and I started to play it, and it just got too depressing because it could happen.
Yeah, so that's a little too real for my taste. Well, thank you for writing to us. Our last shout out for the day comes from Sunshine Kid 21, and Sunshine Kid 21 says, "Could you guys do a podcast about root canals? I heard it was a scam and it causes health problems, etc. Thanks, I love the podcasts." Root canals as a conspiracy?
That's interesting. I had heard that the metal filling that is used, the amalgam that is used, is that what it is? Amalgam? Is used in cavities can have dangerous health effects, potentially. Root canals, I'm not too aware of, but I will say it's honestly surprising that dentistry uses some of the same old techniques and has for quite a while, for decades. But it would be interesting to look into.
Oh. Do you see that? It's Josh and Chuck. They're waving at us. They're like, get out of the studio.
Oh, I thought that was just a hello wave. Okay, well, I've just been waving to them for like 5 minutes. So, sorry.
Maybe that's all they're doing. Oh, nope. Nope. I'm pretty sure I know what that sign means.
They're holding up a sign. It says, this is the end of your... And they are correct. However, it is not the end of the show. Matt, Paul, Noel, and I will be back very soon. We hope that you will join us as well. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter. You can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. And that's stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com, where you can find every episode we've ever produced and some videos and some other stuff. Pictures of Ben. If you want to look at pictures of Ben, go to stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com.
You really sold me out on that one.
And there are pictures of me too.
And there are a lot. And you can find various different stories that for one reason or another might not make it on the show yet.
Hey, are you listening to Ridiculous History yet? You should be. It's the show that our friends Ben and Noel are hosting. It is really fun. And you guys are doing some really fun stuff with guests on your show that you've discussed with me about. And then I've been listening to it as a fan.
Thanks.
Because it's really, really fun, specifically with our complaint department here on this show, Mr. Jonathan Strickland.
Oh, yeah, who is available for any complaints or concerns 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, jonathan.strickland@howstuffworks.com. And, you know, we value the complaints. Keep us honest. Make sure you send them to the right address so we can treat them with the import they deserve. You might be asking why my longtime colleague Matt is not on the show Ridiculous History. There is a reason. It turns out that Matt is one of the masterminds behind one of the most popular shows on Apple Podcast as we speak, Atlanta Monster. If you like this show, you will love Atlanta Monster.
Yeah. Subscribe today. New episodes every Friday. We're looking into the missing and murdered children cases from 1979 to 81 in Atlanta. So, start listening if you're not already.
And with this very long goodbye, we will end with a message for everyone who doesn't care for social media and all that hullabaloo and ephemeral liking and sharing or whatever emojiing people are doing now. You can write to us with an idea or topic directly. We are
Conspiracy@HowStuffWorks.com.